got to talk about celebration, the fun stuff, and now I'm going to talk about death. Teamwork makes the dream work. All right. Let me see if I can get the PowerPoint going. Yes, we can. All right. Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting us to share. And I want to share today from personal experience, because that's what's always most interesting for me to listen to, and it's what rings most true. And as I was reflecting on what to share over the last 5 or 6 years, I see a dominant theme in my life, and it's not necessarily a theme that I would have chosen for myself, but it is the one that pops up, if you will, which is practice resurrection. And that phrase, practice resurrection, is the closing line of a really fantastic Wendell Berry poem. I'm just going to read a portion of it. He writes, "Ask the questions that have no answers. Invest in the millennium. Plant sequoias. Say that your main crop is the forest that you did not plant, that you will not live to harvest. Say that the leaves are harvested when they have rotted into the mold. Call that profit. Prophesy such returns. Put your faith in the 2 inches of humus that will build under the trees every 1,000 years. Listen to carrion. Put your ear close and hear the faint chattering of the songs that are to come. Expect the end of the world. Laugh. Laughter is immeasurable. Be joyful, though you have considered all the facts." The poem goes on, and it ends with that thunderous closing line, practice resurrection. That phrase, practice resurrection, has been ringing in my mind, largely because these last years have felt like they've been full of death and endings, and resurrection sometimes seems to be in short supply. And maybe it's just me and this time of midlife. I'm almost 46, and so I'm seeing peers and myself starting to lose more and more parents, and we start to see the ending of important life roles as we launch our kids into adulthood, and we don't have those little kid in the house parenting roles anymore. And we're starting to see the loss of those invincible feelings of youth as we face more and more aging health problems, and we buy ourselves the days of the week pill boxes and start filling them up every week. I actually have two. I've got the morning and night one now. You're just staring mortality in the face a little more closely. And I ask, how do I practice resurrection in these personal realms? But maybe it's not just me. Maybe you too, as we navigate a chaotic world full of death and endings, maybe you too feel the need to practice some resurrection. Because if the pandemic did anything, it sure showed us how quickly life can take a dramatic turn, and how the things that we took for granted can be over and gone before we know it. I think looking at the political landscape, whether here in the U.S. or back in our home in Ecuador, the instability and the rapid-fire endings of programs or jobs or security can make our heads spin. And the pain of friendships or even family relationships straining or rupturing over political division can feel like death also. So what does it look like to practice resurrection in our politics and in our relationships? Or what about the state of churches in the U.S., where attendance is down across the board, and religious charitable giving, maybe not in this church, amen, but overall has hit a historic low. The church in Minnesota, where I'm originally from, that supported me as a missionary when I first went to Mexico as an 18-year-old, and then that sacrificially gave, faithfully gave to David and to me over the entire duration of our time that we've been in Ecuador. That church, after over 100 years of being in existence, just closed her doors this Easter. How do we practice resurrection in our church communities? And what do I even mean by practicing resurrection? I mean this, that as I look back on the past years, I see all these endings, or as I was talking to my friend Leslie, many deaths, or sometimes not so small deaths or endings, but I also see that somehow I have been pulled through again and again into life. And to be honest, in some cases, some areas, I'm through into life, and in other areas, there's still some cadavers that are waiting for resurrection, for reanimation. But I'm going to share from where I'm at right now. I eventually started to see that these little deaths and resurrections are a pattern. They're a reflection of Jesus' death and resurrection. Another way to say this is Jesus' death and resurrection is a statement of how reality works all the time and everywhere. I'm going to say that again. Jesus' death and resurrection is a statement of how reality works all the time and everywhere. And I can choose to cooperate with that reality, to live in alignment with that truth. And when I do so, I am practicing resurrection. Now, traditionally, sermons have three parts often. And I do actually have three pieces to share about practicing resurrection. But I hesitate to say here are three steps that you can follow to practice resurrection, because that's not an accurate description of my experience. It's not like I received these like sequential instructions to follow. It's more that I look back at the last couple of years and I see this pattern of God like sucking me through death into life. Or, but my husband suggested a nicer way to put it was, God was inviting you to pass through death into life, to practice resurrection. But however you want to name it, I see that practicing resurrection has involved recognizing a few things. Recognizing something ends and something endures and something changes. It looks like this. First, something ends. So I need to grieve the death, the ending, or the loss. And second, I need to identify, why am I grieving? I need to name, what is it that's eternal? What can I affirm that endures forever? And then lastly, in the darkness of death, something changes to produce new life, which nearly always looks different than what we expect or what we imagine or hope for. So I'm going to share with you three situations from my life and hold them up against this big idea that Jesus' death and resurrection is a statement of how reality works all the time and everywhere. And I'm going to share with you how I have been and I am practicing resurrection. Those situations are around my dad's death, around my childhood church's closing, and around a crisis in my faith. So first of all, let me share with you about practicing resurrection when something ends. I've actually shared a little bit in this space in the past about lament, about when something ends, when we're grieving, We need to be gritty. We need to be real. We need to be honest. When my dad was dying of cancer, there were several weeks that we were in and out of my parents' home. There's five of us siblings. We were coming back and forth to spend time caring for him. And it was a beautiful time. It was a sacred time. And it was a brutal time, just emotionally very difficult for all sorts of reasons. And one of my sisters was going through an especially horrific season because she had just had a miscarriage a couple weeks before. And then her sweet pit bull, Chico, had to be put down. And then she had to come up and face my dad's death. It was just wretched. So one evening she made a list of what we ended up calling complaints for upper management. And she stuck it on the fridge with a magnet. Here it is. Here's part of it anyhow. We thought it was hilarious. It says, death though, why? Why miscarriage and not just not pregnant? Dogs don't live long enough. Suffering. Seriously, what is up with death? Respiratory viruses, unnecessary. And this one is a little earthy, but that's what life is, right? Butt fungus. I mention this because this is referencing someone in the family group who had gone to Africa, and I know there's a trip to Africa being planned, and had been warned ahead of time. It's really important to have moisture-wicking undergarments, and this person did not purchase them and learned that cotton is rotten. So just remember, there's a lot of things to complain about. And it's okay to voice our lament. It's okay to grieve because God sees our hearts anyhow, right? He sees us in our grief. He knows that we experience endings, and it only makes sense to share honestly what's on our hearts. We can pour out our grief about death. God can handle it. God even gave us a whole prayer book, the Psalms, to guide us in expressing the whole range of emotions. But not all people see it this way. One world religion has a different solution for the pain of loss and death. The thinking is this: if we practice non-attachment, if we detach ourselves from desire, from others, we don't have to suffer. We won't feel pain when we inevitably lose people or dreams or connections because we aren't holding deeply onto those attachments. No attachment, no suffering. And I understand the appeal. I honestly do. I think that probably the person who came up with that idea had just lost someone that they loved, right? Because when you face the death of a beloved person, that way of thinking suddenly can feel attractive. After my dad died, I remember for weeks looking around at everyone thinking, you're going to die, and you're going to die, and everyone is going to die. Every relationship I have is going to end with either me finding out you died or you finding out that I died. Why are we even doing this? Why would I want to love people when the more I love them, the more it will hurt when I lose them? I totally understand thinking that non-attachment is the safe way to go. That's the way of no more suffering. And yet, there's a line in the Holy Saturday liturgy of the Orthodox Church that gives me goosebumps because it rings so true. I need it to be true. The Eastern iconography of Easter often pictures Jesus pulling souls out of hell. And the line they say is, hell reigns, which checks out very often with the life circumstances people see around us, right? They say, hell reigns, but not forever. The grief of loss we feel can feel like hell. Hell reigns, but not forever. I want that to be true even more than I want to not hurt from losing the people that I love. What about you? At my dad's memorial service, my sister gave a eulogy, speaking of all the ways my dad poured love into her life. And then she said these words that I've thought of so often since then. Big sadness because of big love. Do I want the big love? Big sadness is the unavoidable mortal price of big love. We can grieve, and we can trust that we're still going somewhere good, we're still on the path to resurrection, that if we go through death and keep moving into resurrection, we can be led into life on the other side. So first part of practicing resurrection is to grieve honestly. Something ended. And the next step is to ask, why? Why am I grieving here? And that might seem like an obvious question when something ends or someone dies. Obviously, you're grieving a loss. But what? What have you lost? Identifying and affirming the specifics of the loss being mourned is key to practicing resurrection, because we need to identify what here is the eternal thing we're hoping and trusting will be resurrected. Something endures, even through death and endings. For example, when my church in Minnesota closed this spring, what did I grieve losing? So much. Hope Christian Church was originally planted by Swedish Pentecostal holiness missionaries. The original church minutes were in Swedish. The core families of that church were these reserved Midwesterners, Scandinavian background, and they profoundly marked my life with their mission-hearted generosity, the steadfast kindness, showing up for each other through frigid Minnesota winter Bible studies and sweltering summer outreaches. I heard that Minnesota laugh over there. And then some truly fantastic Midwestern potluck spreads. Ardell Hansen's Special K bars will always hold a place in my heart. Why should those good attributes end? They shouldn't. I feel grieved that a church that made such a positive impact on so many people over so much time should come to an end. That church never had more than about 100 people in it, but when we first started fundraising to go to Ecuador, they pledged to give us over $1,000 a month, which was just jaw-dropping generosity, and they gave steadfastly and faithfully month after month and year after year. And then they also supported a missionary aviation fellowship pilot and his family in Belize. And eventually they picked up supporting church planters in Thailand. And when my parents, my dad was an elder at that church, eventually left the church in painful circumstances a number of years ago, I wondered if the community would stop supporting us. You know what? They kept right on supporting us. It was beautiful. Hope tried all sorts of things to stay open. Different pastors considering church mergers, doing a relaunch. Why would the doors close, God? I feel grief about that. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized that everything ends. Like, obviously, people die. I just talked about my dad. But institutions end, too. Is there a specific church out there that has lasted since it was planted in Jesus' day? I mean, the church universal, yes, here we are, but a specific church? They come and they go. They're born and they die too. Why does that make me so sad? I think it's because I don't want good things to end. It's such a human desire. When it's good, we want it to last forever. Thinking of Peter on the Mount of Transfiguration. So he sees Jesus, and his clothing is like lightning, and he's vibing with Elijah and Moses up there. And he's like, this is good. This needs to last forever. Let's build some houses and keep this going indefinitely. Like, we get that desire, right? Something's good, make it last. But we also see the evidence of our own eyes that good things end all the time. So what do we humans do with the fact that goodness appears to be fleeting? Well, the ancient Stoic philosophers would say, memento mori, remember, you will die. That's a cheerful thought, right? The idea was, keep your death before you always. By keeping death at the forefront of your thoughts, you're reminded that nothing is permanent. Seneca advocated living every day as a complete life and advised, let us postpone nothing. Look, I love the idea of living more fully in the present moment. Like, that's a good thing. But man, living every day as a complete life, postponing nothing, that's a lot of pressure. I know me, and I am just not capable of living in a heightened state of cherishing every moment, even on my best day. Like, the goodness of life can't depend on me enjoying it every single moment before it's gone forever. No, I need the goodness of existence, the goodness of my dad's life, the goodness of Hope Christian Church's legacy in this world, that goodness to be eternal and lasting. So while some ancient philosophers say, remember, nothing good lasts, my heart is crying out like Peter's, saying, good things should never end. And in fact, this is a beautiful treasure at the heart of Christianity, that if death and resurrection is true everywhere and always, then nothing good ever ends. Because if death is not possible for Christ, it's not possible for anything that shares in the divine nature. 2 Peter 1:4 says, his divine power has given us everything we need for a godly life through our knowledge of him who called us by his own glory and goodness. Through these, he has given us his very great and precious promises so that through them you may participate in the divine nature, having escaped the corruption in the world caused by evil desires. So something endures. What an immense relief to know that the good lasting forever doesn't depend on me, whether I can get my act together to enjoy it or not. The good that God gives us, the good that he works through us, is eternal. There's a quote I love that says, Christianity's true and unique storyline has always been incarnation. If creation is very good, which it tells us in Genesis 1:31, at its very inception, how could a divine agenda ever be undone by any human failure to fully cooperate? Very good sets us on a trajectory toward resurrection. God does not lose or fail. That is what it means to be God. Something endures. My dad is more alive now with Christ than when he sat next to me on earth. His spirit endures. Hope Christian Church plans to continue to support us, along with their other missionaries, even after closing their doors, by using the funds from the sale of their property. The goodness of their generosity endures. Goodness never dies because of Christ's resurrection. And yet, something changes. Practicing resurrection changes things. 6 years ago, David and I came up to the United States for what we told people, this is us all at the airport, we told people would be a furlough year for connecting with our missionary supporters and a year for our kids to experience life in the U.S. What we didn't tell very many people were we weren't sure if we would ever go back to Ecuador. I was deep in the throes of a faith crisis, precipitated by a variety of factors, hurt and disappointment with church leadership, feeling like a failure for closing our Vineyard's English service there, experiencing ministry burnout, struggling with increasing disillusionment, seeing dissonance between behavior of portions of the U.S. church compared to the global church, and a personal dark night of the soul that had me questioning some long-held beliefs. And one night, we sat across the dinner table from Dan and Ann Rack, and I poured out my hurt about all the endings I was experiencing. I was lamenting before them, voicing my grief and my frustration. And I don't remember their exact reply, but I do remember the calm and the loving listening that they extended to me. And I recall Dan sharing about a metaphorical death of their own when they walked through the failure of their church plant in Tinley Park, I think it was. And Dan shared that he stepped out of ministry for several years after that. Something ended. But then he and Ann prayed with us. And even though, again, I can't recall their exact words, I do recall the sense that Dan and Ann had complete trust that my faith would endure. And to be clear, I did not have that trust or that faith at the time, but I felt their faith that God's eternal good in me would never die. Nothing could end it. Something endures. And over the following year, that was 2019, there were many surprises. Global pandemic, anyone? I had a lot of hard work ahead, surrounded by some good friends and family, working to unbundle a lot of beliefs and practices, examine them together, sort out what were damaging lies to discard, what were life-giving truths to hold on to, and especially at first, I was unsure if my faith would survive. And the truth is, my faith, as it was before, didn't survive. That faith had to die for a new and deeper faith to be resurrected in its place. As the preface to the Catholic funeral liturgy says, life is not ended, it is merely changed. Change. Something changes in death and resurrection. One priest wrote, "Resurrection is another word for change, but particularly positive change, which we tend to see only in the long run. In the short run, it often just looks like death." And our hearts resist death with everything they've got. The Hollywood way, the American way, is not to die. I don't know if anyone's seen the new Superman movie. We haven't yet. I'd like to. It looks so cool. We want a rescue that prevents a death. That the Superman, I've seen the trailer, he zooms in to rescue the child from the exploding debris. That is the miracle that comes in the nick of time before the child dies. The hero flies in just in time to end our suffering. Everyone wants that. Everyone wants a resurrection. No one wants to die. But the idea of resurrection is that something actually dies. We don't like that at all. We really don't want to die. We don't want hope that arrives after death has happened. We want hope before death, right? I didn't want to feel like I was potentially letting go of everything I had built in my life, of my beliefs and convictions, of my ministry, of my community, of my livelihood, of my friends, maybe even some family members, because of my questioning. This putting to death of the rotten old faith, this weeding out of the lies that were interwoven into my old beliefs and practices did not feel good. It was actually terrifying. And the risk of loss felt then, and it still feels to some extent, fearsome. We fear change. We want the known, the familiar, the comfortable, the predictable. And instead, we have a God who calls us to follow him into death, into the tomb, into the belly of the whale, into letting go of everything that we held on to and trusting we'll be led into life on the other side. Nothing goes through death without being changed. In resurrection, something changes. And that's a pattern here that's miraculous. The miracle is that God uses what would normally destroy us, the tragic, the sorrowful, the painful, the unjust deaths that lead us all to the bottom of our lives to transform us. Because God's job description is to turn death into life. That's what God does with every new springtime, every new life, every new season, every new anything, because this is exactly God's nature. Romans 4:17 says, He is the one who gives life to the dead and calls into existence the things that do not exist. God is the one who always turns death into life, and no one who trusts in this God will ever be put to shame. Amen. Let's stand up and pray. God, I ask that you would teach us to follow you in the practice of resurrection, to follow your example, to follow the reality that you show us in your life and your death, that you invite us to participate in day by day. And it's a fight. It's a fight in this world to take time to sit and grieve our losses, to sit in the ashes of death, and to still name the eternal good and the beauty that we believe will last forever because of you. That's challenging. But I ask that you would allow us time to listen to you, to wait for you, to spark our imaginations, to see what changed resurrection life could look like on the other side of death. Thank you for that miracle, that gift that you've given us as Christ's own. Amen.